Lucky enough to be joined by the band Simorgh today. Five young gentlemen students, are you all?
No, I don't think any of us are.
You finished?
One season.
Still one. Well, I think when you wrote some of your biographies, you were still students.
Yeah. When we started the band, we were all the students.
Yes. Okay, so please introduce yourselves one by one and tell us what it is you play in the band.
Okay, I'm Ali Nourbakhsh from Iran. I play the daf.
Which is the drum, frame drum. Great.
I'm Zartosht. Zartosh Safari. I play Ney.
Yes, which is the flute.
Yeah. Okay.
Hi, my name is Ehsan. I'm playing Tar, which is Persian lute. Some people call it.
Yeah, great.
My name is Parham, and I play the surna, which is a woodwind instrument.
It's kind of like a shenai or an oboe.
The Indian one.
Yeah, or an oboe.
It's similar.
Because it's got a double reed.
I'm not sure.
That means two reeds stuck together.
Well, on the inside.
Yes, it's like an oboe. Go on.
My name's Amin, and I play the lute, and I compose some things, which are played by some of the group.
And, Amin?
Yeah.
You also rap, don't you?
No, not really. I've seen you! I don't like to call it that.
You chant, then. You sing.
Yeah.
You sing and chant. So there's something very Sufi about your whole band. It's not just the name. Because who chose the name, actually?
Actually, we didn't. We were playing in London universities like the Imperial and Brunel, and a couple of students called us. We were just playing for Iranian events and for fun. And a couple of Iranian students called us Simurgh, and we said, "Oh, that's a nice name," and we stuck with it.
Simurgh actually means, for people who don't know, it's the name of a book by Attar, isn't it? From 11th century Sufi.
It's not the name of the book. It's the Conference of the Bird.
Oh, that's right, yeah. And Simurgh is the one that they are trying to find.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but there's no special relevance then in your name?
Kind of, because we all come from different backgrounds. If you know the story, all these birds come together in search of the Simurgh, which is the ultimate bird, and through the journey, many of them, you know, leave the group, and at the end they realize that Simurgh is them, and it's the unity of these birds and things like that. And I think the main thing about our band is that we all come from different backgrounds, and we came together and we try to have fun and play music. We are not after money. We together and have fun. I think I'm sure. Mm-hmm.
Does anyone disagree?
No.
So which bird would you be then? Would you be an owl? What would you be?
That's a new question.
Yeah, exactly. We never had that question.
I'm a crow.
Yeah, I think Ali looks like a crow more.
Oh, charming. No, but the birds all personify different human fears before they go on the journey, don't they? And then each one comes forward and says the reason they can't go on this search. So it was interesting for me. I mean, another thing about your band, which is very Sufi, is the kind of chanting and the music, like the song you just did, where it gets kind of meditative, repetitive, don't you think?
Yeah, but this one's quite a social, I mean, not a social song even, it's just a bit of a commentary on, like, personal lives of Iranians that come here, and the feeling that I have when I play with the group, and these things that I see as, like, cultural weapons, so I wouldn't really see that one as much of a Sufi song, really.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the Sufis were quite militant.
Okay.
But another, you could say that about our BRBR song, which is the Rumi point. Rumi was the.
Yeah, I think that's a given then.
Exactly. Yeah. But the rest of our songs are not really Sufi.
I think it's more like an Iranian folk thing that people generally, Iranian old music is like that.
Yeah.
Exactly. Sufism is embedded in our culture.
If you just take out the recent, I don't know, 50 years music, everything else has that kind of feeling of going around certain things and a line of melody, keeping the rhythm, bringing up. It's not just Sufi music, it's generally...
Yeah,
and
it's traditional folk.
Yeah, even love songs, everything is about the one or everything. So there's everything can be interpreted in that way if you've got that those glasses on, if you see what I'm saying. All that.
Yeah. I know you could have all, for your careers, decided not to do this because you were all studying at the time, and I think it's very hard to balance studies and music playing. Did you find it hard?
Studying and playing music was fine.
Really?
Exactly, that's what I was going to say. Yeah.
Working is harder?
Working is hard because you don't have time. When you get home, like 8 or 9, you don't have any time to play.
For example, this Sunday we had to get up at the same time that we have to go to work to come here.
I know, I'm so sorry about that. It was his suggestion.
My I had to cancel my football today.
Yeah, but then there, it's so beautiful.
Well, you go to lectures for 2 hours a day and then the rest is like, and go and play music. But working, you have to start at 9 in the morning and finish at 8.
So you don't think your studies would have suffered because you kept doing gigs? But things have got more intense, haven't they? Things have got more intense since you left university. You're getting more gigs. You played at the BFI, Queen Elizabeth Hall. Now you're doing BBC Workshop. Now you're here. This didn't happen when you were a student. So obviously you've kind of picked up.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah. No, you could say that, absolutely. But still, you know... when you're a student, you have the flexibility with in terms of the timing. Yeah. But with work, it's not true. You only have your evenings and weekend. And that's it.
And I think bit of the change is mainly because first, we've been together for 4 or 5 years now. And secondly, as soon as some of us got to work, like Ali, we saw it a bit more seriously, like picked up more serious from that. Like the most 2 years ago, I think, onwards, we looked at it a bit different because when we were all students, we were just looking for the fun and nothing else. We would sit and play for hours. And you know.
Most students are like going out drinking, smashing things, and you're playing. That's very nice.
So, and now that they have less time, I mean, I'm still a student, but everyone else had, they have less time. So have to be more oriented on certain hours and stuff. That's why it gets a bit more serious automatically.
Yeah. Obviously, it's a bigger sacrifice now, your time. So I know your father supports you very much. It's fantastically refreshing to hear that, you know, parents don't want to force their children to become doctors and lawyers. I mean, I know you're working in a Citigroup, so, but you know that your parents allow you or don't. You know, they can't stop you, but at least they are supporting you in this artistic endeavor.
Yeah. I think Amy would be the perfect example.
Sorry, what was the question?
Well, you told me earlier that you used to be in a rock, a hip hop rap band, and your father would have preferred it if you'd stayed in that band.
Not so much preferred it if I stayed in that group, but like. I think maybe he sees some of my activities today as a bit sort of a bit extreme nationalist, a bit too traditionalist, and a bit like resistant to modern influences. Mm. You see what I'm saying?
So are the lyrics quite militant? What are they? I don't know what's being said.
They're not so militant. To a certain extent, this doesn't speak for the rest of the group. They might agree with me, but I don't want to put words in other people's mouth. For me, when I play, like when I'm writing things, I see a kind of a cultural war going on at the moment, because like, especially anything that isn't in the mainstream media or isn't the accepted cultural norms is just on its way to getting lost. So I see, like, you know, every song as, like, a kind of an attack back at that kind of trend. So even in the songs, like I said, in that song that we just played now for you, I refer to the instruments as the weapons of culture, because, like, not that I have a violent side, it's got nothing to do with it. I see it as something that it's, like, you can use to stem that tide to, you know... push it back and say, no, we like the fact that there's differences in cultures. I really like, it's more of a reactionary movement to all this crap that goes on. Sorry.
That's fine.
All this stuff that goes on around, like, you know, all this kind of mixed music that doesn't have any real heritage behind it, and people imitating cultures that they don't even know anything about, and while their own culture is so rich, so it really, really angers me. And I think that's the only, I wouldn't say it's militant, that's the only anger that comes over.
But apart from that, it's quite peaceful.
Yeah.
What are the lyrics about? Tell us.
Well, I just described that one. It's just basically me saying, I've come from a, you know, distant place, and I just describe the things that to me are dear as culturally. I even speak of the gallium pipe that we smoke, like
the shisha.
Well, if it's the shisha. Mm-hmm. Or I speak about my instrument. I say I come with the warm sound of the oud. I come with the blissful sound of the ney. I come with the sound of the daf, and you know, all these things, and the, you know, the skin color, the tone, everything that I see as something that maybe, you know.
Yeah, you're laying yourself there.
Represents me.
That's good.
I'd say that's what I've come with.
I think you're on the right station then.
Excellent.
But something that really struck me about your band at the Contemporary Iranian Music event, which you partly organised, didn't you, was that everyone else was singing with a backing track CD, and you were the only people who brought real instruments. And it was just so much more vibrant for that reason. Well, for that was maybe one of the reasons, but it was really engaging, you know, and it's really refreshing as well. And I think that's something that young people aren't really... Where I work, Camden Roundhouse, people are learning instruments and so on. It's all very electronic.
Now, that's the thing, acoustic. You know, when I said that we all come from different backgrounds, that was Amin's point of view. For someone like me who grew up in Iran, and I don't have that kind of the resistance against the mainstream in UK and things like that, for me, it's just... Bringing our traditional instruments and showing it to the world, and our generation especially, and showing it to them that, you know, they are not very boring, they are not the just traditional instrument, they've got huge potential, and we don't need electronic and Western music to be happy and, you know, play in the club and dance in the club. We can use our own traditional instruments and still be very rich and cultural and happy and joyful.
Yeah, it's good to be joyful, isn't it?
Exactly.
You're a very jolly group as well, I must say, which is, you know, right for Iranian boys. But what I find with all the people I've met is that music, like the Shah and Khomeini, is a massive divider. You know, people either fall into one of two camps. I hate folk music, or I can't stand all this modern Persian music. And the music itself is either traditional or imitating Western music, isn't it? Don't you find? So I have a terrible time when researching the show to look for something unusual. Mm-hmm. And I think your band would definitely fall into that category because you do mix different elements and you're prepared to do something unusual. How far would you be prepared to go?
What propositions?
What are the parameters of what you do? And would you go into something completely unthought of, or do you have a defined image of what Simorgh is?
I think everyone has individual members of the group would have different parameters. I don't think I can really answer that question.
Like, who can answer that question?
First of all, we wouldn't go to any political area. That's the first thing we agreed when we started the band. No political issue.
You never know. Zartosh might go out one night and have an epiphany and come back and say, guys, we're wasting our time.
No, but the reason we can't answer that is that really we've been from so different backgrounds. So just to mention, comparing Ali with me 5 years ago, I wasn't into traditional music or even the folk music or the mahalli music, as we say, at all. And I was just around the pop music of Iran and a bit, and then I got a bit into Western music, and then I suddenly, you know, had a look over there, and then I got interested, and then it was my full thing. Whereas we were so different. So considering this, it's not just people that found that, okay, we exactly are the same, we're matching, let's form a band. We just sat down and we're trying to reach something that it's like
the group was formed so very organically. So we never sat down and said, okay, this is our strategy, this is where we go.
We still haven't thought of that after all these years. We never had the talk about whatever everyone brings to the group. So like Amin has been really active recently, and we all love it, and we all go with it. If next year Ehsan does something like that, we're all
what good. Music does Ehsan like to listen to? Be honest now.
Traditional music all the time.
Are you serious? You don't go home and put on Bryan Adams or something?
No, that's a really interesting question. You know, when I was in Iran, I was like listening to like Bryan Adams, as you say, or like I was listening to all this like Western music all the time. But at the same time, I was like playing my own tar and going to like Iranian traditional concerts. I never had a problem with that. But when I came to England for the first time, like, 10 years ago, whatever, I started like listening to like traditional music. I don't know why, but because probably my parents or like.
Also, we get bombarded with all that stuff here, so we kind of take it for granted. I think over in Iran, you have to get hold of the music, and it's so, you know, exotic because it's something foreign. And then when you're here, obviously, you're feeling a bit homesick.
Yeah, you're feeling that was much better.
And maybe it's got something to do with losing your identity. You want to keep that, and you want to listen to the Iranian music.
So do you feel that your music is inspiring other people who feel that they're losing their culture? Because for me, I mean, I don't have any hardly Iranian friends. And I don't listen to Iranian music either. I hardly have any, but apart from this show. So when I came to your gig, I felt really enthused. So you must be doing that. And there's not many other people out there doing that.
We got quite a lot of positive feedback, which for me is just like the only reason I can actually continue these things. Because, you know, like when you go and a job like the 9 to 6, 9 to 5, 9
which
to 7.
Which is very, very difficult for Amin.
There's just nothing to inspire you. But when I see like people, especially after the Camden gig, kids who don't even listen to Iranian music that much, they come up to me and say, you know, I really, really actually like that. I was so surprised that that's how it sounds. Like, I never knew that's even Iranian music. Because, like, when you play that to Iranians, they might even say, I think that's Turkish music. I think that's Arabic, just because it sounds so, like, raw.
We actually had that as a comment on one of our gigs on YouTube. Someone said, that's Eastern. Is that Turkish?
Well, listen, you can't go. But the people who write on YouTube sometimes are so stupid. You can't.
I know.
At least didn't get insulted. Or maybe that was an insult. I don't know. But, you know, didn't you ever think of going into a career of being a writer, a poet, a lyricist?
Not really. No, not at all. I don't even value my lyrics that much. Because
you mustn't say that's bad.
No, because you know, it's not like I've sat down and read the works of many people and then come up with this thing. It's just what came first. And we just did it because I really like the beats and I like the sounds and I just want something to represent it. There's lyrics in these songs that sometimes I think, like, I'm sure I could rhyme that better. or I'm sure I could, say
I've,
something.
I've got two answers for that. One is that it's a massive misconception that in order to write good words, you have to have read lots of other people's. It's not true. It's, it comes from within you. And the second one is that rhyming is the worst enemy of proper meaning, because as soon as you start to rhyme, sometimes you're just sacrificing the meaning.
No, I understand what you're saying, but the answer to that is the traditional mentality goes through every like aspect of my what I find to be beautiful. So like if I value those traditional poets, I have to appreciate their work and I have to like listen to it and take lessons from it and then come up with something. So this isn't something that I would call putting lyrics together. It's just something to go with the music.
I think the thing that helped our band to be successful in, with our audience and the and Amin's and other guys' lyrics in the band is the factor of success is that it comes from our heart. You know, it's not something artificial. We don't we don't go and read Hafez, Rumi, Saadi, which are great Persian poets, and then come up with new lyrics. This comes from our heart. This is what we feel, and we think we should sing with our instruments. We should sing to our audience, and there is nothing artificial about it. And that's why people like it. But as Amin says, we don't really value it that much because it's just something that we feel.
Yeah, we see it that way. But it's another thing, as you said, it's not artificial. It's that we don't push it.
Exactly.
If you don't have that element of, okay, let's do something commercial that's going to work in 2 weeks. If you don't have that, it works much better than that. Yeah. We might have our very first gig with like 1,000 people. It's possible. But then that's not it. That's not going to work like
that. It's good. Oh, no, I wish you all the success. Yeah, we're an organic band that grew out of, being friends. And somehow people really appreciate you. And one day you're just going to have to say, I value what I do. So what's next for you? Are you going to BBC Workshop this afternoon? Tell us a bit about how you got that and what you'll be doing.
It was through our contacts with a guy down at BBC Persian, like the World Service, Behzad Bulur, who introduced me to Lincoln Abbott, who's the learning coordinator of...
He used to be,
BBC Symphonic Orchestra. And basically, we just had a good working style with him, and he really liked it that we could come and, work with different groups of people. Usually we go with the family orchestra or something where it's all these people that might not have that much of a musical background, but
the
they
original
wanted,
project was yeah. to compose a song with BBC Symphony Orchestra, and mostly Amin and Lincoln Abbott put together this piece, and we performed with a collection of 12
members of the Symphonic Orchestra.
Yeah, but these are the workshops that Amin talked about.
Yeah.
So let me ask Zartosh, because you've been very quiet. I knew you would. What would you do with your nay in the workshop? Would you show people how to play?
The first time when I played, the people really enjoyed. Yeah. As Amin knows, and one lady came and she asked me that, how do you play? How do you blow that?
Yeah.
And she was shocked, actually.
Because you put it in your mouth. And
because I put between my
teeth. Vertically instead of horizontally.
Yeah.
Play something now.
Yeah, I can, yeah.
Cool. We haven't heard it on its own. It's fantastic.
That something is interesting. It has four voices, so four noises. That's why it's interesting for everybody. But nay, it's very, very, very interesting for
flexible.
And that's something always discussed in Sufi poems: is the sound of the nay, the reed, and it's very close to like the first instrument that probably ever existed was the sound going through the reeds.
I think that was the first instrument.
Do you think so?
I think so, yeah.
But I mean, it was an incidental. They noticed the sound of the wind going through the reeds, and sometimes the reeds would have a hole in and it would make a whistling
sound.
Sure,
absolutely, yeah.
So I think this was very beautiful for that reason. And it's just a piece of bamboo, isn't it?
It seems very simple.
Just play something. No, it's like, see, just play
they're gonna
something.
They're going to stop me speaking. But...
Thank you. Wow, that's amazing.
Exactly.
So you're putting your teeth into it?
Yeah, yeah.
One side of the mouth?
Between these two teeth.
Yeah. So one of your front
teeth.
Should
be in the middle.
And one of your dog teeth. It should be in the middle.
Yeah, it should be in the middle.
So you're a squonk nay player?
Yeah.
That's great. It's
I don't know how to explain, actually.
It's great. You're all very talented. So apart from the BBC workshop, what else have you got planned in the future?
We are working. Right now I'm negotiating with Kiosk Band.
Kiosk,
yeah.
Is Kiosk a Persian word?
No.
It's Kiosk, yeah. The way you just said it, you made it sound
I know, because in Farsi we say Kiosk, and I think we should say it in Farsi accent, because in Iranian accent, because that's
the name. Because that's the name of the group.
Exactly, because Kiosk are very, very famous now in Iranian underground music, as they call it, and we're trying to have a joint concert in London with them.
Are they coming over? Are they?
Yeah, they are. Mm. Their third album is coming out in autumn, and they're gonna have a tour in Europe.
Would you like to have an album come out?
That's what we're working on right now.
Yeah.
With no money and recording at home.
Yeah,
that's normal. It's a bedroom disc.
Yeah,
that's okay. That's how you start out, isn't it?
I'm afraid so.
Album is not our, you know, having an album is not our, a goal to us, but we have to have an album.
I think it's very much a live experience, you know. So if you get a chance to see Simorgh play live, and you're listening, I do suggest you go down and hear them. Any gigs coming up in the future?
The only gig that hopefully gonna be happening gonna be in November with Kiosk and another gig.
Yeah, I think it's been organized by some of our friends who from the BBC Persian service, but they're not. I don't think it's affiliated with them. I'm not too sure, but they've got a whole sort of group of Iranians coming. They're bringing people from Iran.
Where is this? When is this?
We'll find out as soon as it's to be confirmed. But it's they're very serious about it, and they've already approached all the artists.
I just have to say, you know, when they say this is a Persian Arab music night, I went on my own because no one wanted to come with me, naturally, and I stood there and I thought, this is going to be great, you know, I haven't heard Persian music in London, and it was just horrible. It was horrible, and a lot of the stuff they put on, to my taste, is horrible. It's just so stock.
That's the thing, you know, I personally don't like Iranian pop mainstream music. In terms of the music, pop music is usually the not high quality
squinting
music.
Yeah. Earlier on, I was just speaking to him, and he kept putting the earpiece in his ear urgently. So I said, "What are you listening to? The football?" He said, "No, folk music, sitar." So it's probably your lifeline for you two, at least.
Exactly, but I'm sure Paul has a different lifestyle.
I don't know. Yeah, I can't even put a name on it. Yeah. I mean, since the further I've gone, the further I've lost what I want. Basically, it's just that. I just confidently can say it's everything that's happening at the moment. So for the time being, this is the best thing for me. Mm. And I'm not going to comment on for the future. This is the sort right path. Okay. I mean, I'm not going to turn back and go to appreciate Japanese music, which I've listened to and I like. But
you never know.
I'm just going to say, you know, it's going
to
be similar, but...
It would be great to have, you know, a Persian-Japanese fusion. Or maybe a one-off concert. You go over there, they come
Amin
over here.
That's what Amin hates. A stereotype concert.
It's not a stereotype concert, unless you make it. You know, it could be really innovative. For example, my friends in the Guillemots, they've started using some traditional instruments in a way that they're never used. So it's just a new sound.
But that's the thing with Simorgh. We welcome organic ideas if we... meet a Japanese musician and we suddenly play music and we have a gig, that's good. But if some people come to us and say, we're going to have an East meets West concert.
Yeah, you have to watch out.
Yeah, that's the first thing that Amin says, no.
No meetings.
No meetings.
I'm a fascist. I'll be honest.
No, people see Amin and the first time they say, he's very aggressive, he's, you know, into rap, or he's into he's a very nationalist. But when they get to know Amin, they realize he's just against everything about the stereotyping and the mainstream. And he's a very good guy, man.
He's the lion at the gate.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so we've had a silent witness for the whole show, we haven't mentioned. Okay, so who have you brought with you?
Mehnush is here. She has been filming us for
6 months.
That's a long video.
Okay, Omid Omer is a charity that helps disadvantaged women in Iran.
Yes,
and you send the money over to help them get education
and fundraising them and prepare more information about them for young Iranian here. Our target is more Iranian, young Iranian who are working now, who have finished their studies.
Yes. What's the website?
It's omidemer.org.
Yeah. So it's omidemehr.org.
Omidemehr.org.
Okay, thank you very much. Thanks, guys, for coming in. You've been really good. And of course, to you all. I wish you all the best in the future.
Thank you.